Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
With the cabin crew are being conducted as we speak this afternoon. We'd hoped to talk to the pilots today, but those interviews are now scheduled for tomorrow morning. Drug testing was completed, and those results have been sent to the lab.
You know, I got to say something right here. Let's knock off the music. That was a fat slob, if you missed it, from the NTSB holding a press conference today, a governmental bureaucrat hack. One of the most uncomely women I've seen in a long time in government, which is saying an awful lot, had the nerve to get up there and talk about yesterday's miracle on the Hudson River, and without once mentioning the hero pilot, the heroic crew, the fact that all the passengers were saved as a result of their quick work and heroism, this fat governmental slob bureaucrat had the nerve to say and imply that the pilot was stoned. You know, I'd like to see drug testing for you, you fat pig. I'd like to see drug testing for every member of Congress, you slob. You know what government is good for, don't you? Robbing the people and imprisoning the people. That's about all it's good for. Well, look, George Bush is turning the keys over to Obama next week, and he's not through yet. He bankrupted the economy. He wrecked the borders. He slashed the language. He wrecked the culture. He dragged us into two wars that he refuses to win or to end, and he's actually set the stage for a total conversion to a Venezuela-like economy, and he's given the keys over to Obama, and the Democrats are very happy to turn this country into a socialist nation, and it's going on right in front of our eyes. And you say to yourself, well, why didn't you say something sooner? Well, let me remind you of something. I am not a Republican. I have been a self-declared independent conservative ever since I began in radio. Moreover, I warned you about Paulson before you even heard his name. I knew he had come from Goldman Sachs. I saw the warning signs at least 9 months ago. I warned you about him. I feared something like this would happen. I had no idea it would be on this scale. Do you realize that the entire war in all of these years, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, have estimated costs of approximately $500 million. And yet just yesterday, after giving hundreds of billions of dollars, the government signs over a check for another $350 billion. Think about how much money that is. We've been complaining about the cost of war, corrupt governmental contracting in Iraq and elsewhere. It's peanuts compared to what these gangsters are doing right now. And it's going on right in front of our eyes. So you say, well, where's the press on this? I want to remind you that a free press for a free people means that the press is not in business with the government. I want to remind you that journalists are supposed to be the watchdogs for the people, not the lapdogs of the government. I want to remind you that with the increasing conglomeration of power in the hands of fewer and fewer media madmen, who are intimately connected to the power structure in terms of the governmental power structure, we have now evolved into a Soviet-style media. It's a government media complex. Although benign, nevertheless, you rarely hear criticism of the type necessary to have stopped this wholesale bankrupting of the United States of America and the debasing of the currency. That's why you're not hearing much about it. Oh, you hear occasional complaints on CNBC, but they're usually shouted down by the functionaries who want interviews with various governmental, you know, bureaucrats. Now, of course, last night I couldn't watch it. Bush bids farewell to the American people. Well, we bid good riddance to Bush, but am I supposed to just play this garbage? I mean, he said, I have followed my conscience and done what I thought was right. That's great, George. Why don't you look at the reality of what you did? Who cares about your conscience? Maybe your conscience is a crackpot. Who says your conscience is necessarily sane? Maybe your conscience is crazy or flawed. Maybe you're a nut. He says, I followed my conscience and done what I thought was right. Does anyone tell him what he's done? Does he understand the wreckage around him? No, I guess not. Not with a compliant press. Bush tries to cement legacy in farewell speech. Bush leaves behind two unfinished wars and an economy in turmoil, and he warned in a speech of tough times ahead. No kidding. Well, my goodness, I can't. Oh, Bush is emotional at the thought of leaving office, along with his wife, Laura. Laura, another prize. I know you're not supposed to say anything about the First Lady. I'm not a big fan of Laura. I don't go for Stepford wives. I never have. I distrust them. Okay, and behind every great man, there's a great woman. Behind every moron, there's a moronic wife. That's all I can say. She let this go on? Maybe she should have committed him at some point. She should have called out the men with the butterfly nets. He'll receive a pension of $200,000in his first year of retirement in his new home in Dallas. $200,000 should pay for the root canal costs more today. How can they earn so little money? It's unbelievable. How do they make such little money? No wonder they're all corrupt. If you pay them more, if a president made $10 million a year, maybe they wouldn't be so bent. That'd be the problem. I don't know the answer to that. So here we're moving now into an articulate new president who is an outright socialist. Bush was an inarticulate president who was a crypto-socialist. I caught something yesterday that you haven't seen in the news that's worth talking about. It was on an obscure page of the Wall Street Journal with a picture of Condoleezza Rice Aroney. And the headline says, U.S. and UAE to sign nuclear cooperation pact. I had to turn back to this four times. The Bush administration plans to sign a nuclear cooperation agreement with the UAE on Thursday. Now, I told you that he still has a week to go. That's a week to go. Do you understand this? A week to go. So he signed yesterday a nuclear cooperation agreement with the United Arab Emirates. So I said, wait a minute. This is one of the administration's final foreign policy acts? Will help the United Arab Emirates become the first Arab nation to develop a nuclear power industry? Does anyone see what's going on? Does anyone understand that George Bush was most likely, I don't know what word to use, you have to be very careful. I'm going to use the correct word, a front man for the Arab moneyed interests, a stooge of the Arab money interests, something light like that would work. I don't have any other words that I could use. Their man in Washington, sort of a reversal of our man in Havana. Does this make sense? If you look back, you know, a wise man once wrote, life must be lived forward, but can only be understood backwards. Well, it's the same with the presidency. It must be tolerated on a daily basis, but it can only be understood by looking backwards at it. If you look backwards at Bush's legacy, and you start with him signing virtually on the last day of his in office, almost the last day, a nuclear cooperation pact with a quasi-trustworthy friend in the United Arab Emirates, you have to ask yourself, why is he doing this? Some U.S. lawmakers we see are seeking to block the UAE deal over fears it could fuel a nuclear arms race in the Middle East at a time of mounting concerns over Iran's nuclear ambitions. I want to remind you that the UAE's, the United Arab Emirates, has a major league business relationship with Iran, which is right across the straits from Iran. I know you don't want to talk about this. It's an obscure article. I understand that the golfer wouldn't talk about this because, after all, he was invited to a secret meeting in the White House to say goodbye to the man he was a poster boy of embarrassment for. I don't understand it, boy. Someone wrote that no one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people. And boy, is that true for people who listen to that blowhard. If this guy wasn't simply a cheerleader, like a boy cheerleader, you know, Boy George? Rush Limbaugh is the Boy George of the Republican Party. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Yeah, so Bush is leaving and Obama is entering. He's turning the keys to the country over to Obama. We're going from a moderate left-wing socialist to an extreme left-wing socialist. Now you say, well, why are you saying left-wing socialist? Isn't that an oxymoron? No, they're a right-wing socialist like Adolf Hitler. You see, you don't understand that, but socialism runs the gamut from left-wing to right-wing. Bush was a sort of left-wing socialist. Obama's a far left-wing socialist. But, you know, the media had you believing that Bush was a conservative. I don't know where his conservatism is. He's done some good things. Alito being appointed, Roberts being appointed, saved the Second Amendment. I mean, I have to say that's a great thing he did. Probably he worked against his conscience on that one. But that's a great part of his administration. The rest, forget about it. He says he did his conscience. The guys created something for me from the speech last night. Let's hear it.
This evening, my thoughts return to the first night I addressed you from this house, September the 11th, 2001.
Long live the king. Oh.
The battles waged by our troops are part of a broader struggle between two dramatically different systems.
So you're saying that we're superior to all other cultures?
Liberty and justice light the path to peace.
You're tyrant.
This is the belief that gave birth to our nation.
This is a statement about being anti-abortion. Oh.
5 days from now, the world will witness the vitality of American democracy.
You, as a dictator, are stepping down. Oh.
I join all Americans in offering best wishes to President-elect Obama.
How bigoted. Why not just wish him success?
Tonight I'm filled with gratitude to Laura, who brought joy to this house and love to my life.
So she really was the power behind the throne. It's sickening.
And above all, I thank the American people for the trust you have given me.
Trust? 27% approval rating?
I thank you for the prayers that have lifted my spirits.
Prayers? More Christian bigotry.
And I thank you for the countless acts of courage, generosity,
sickening,
and grace.
Disgusting.
That I have witnessed these past 8 years.
You tyrant, be gone with you.
Oh, sometimes we get juvenile and it's fun. You know, you have to. There's only so much you can take. I don't know if I can do this much longer. I know Monday is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Tuesday is the inauguration of Obama. The entire week is going to be given over to the slavish worship of the extreme left-wing media to Obama this, Obama. The guy's done nothing so far except grift more money out of the taxpayer. And already he's the greatest president in history. I don't know if I could take it. Next week would be a good week for a vacation. Oh, God. Oh, my God. What do we have to look forward to? The only good news this week was that Israel shelled the UN headquarters in Gaza. It was the only bright spot of the whole week. I only wish they had an artillery piece that could reach the East River. 1-800-449-8255. Lou in Virginia Beach, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Welcome. Thank you, Michael Savage, born and bred in from South.
Oh, please,
Jamaica.
Please, no old home week. What's your topic?
Topic is, I think you're on the wrong subject, and let's forget about Bush. You're in a communistic state now, bought by George Soros, okay?
Oh, please. So you mean George Soros is the man who wrote the bailout money for $700 billion? It wasn't George Bush?
The guy that bailed out.
Whoa, slow down. George Soros is not the president of the United States. It's George Bush who has been authorizing the $800 billion bailout. The $700 billion bailout. What do you mean, Soros?
Yeah, I know he did that, but that's beside the point. Where we got into it is because of all the Democrats and when they put out those loans. The Democrats are the ones who are responsible for that.
You see, Lou, you've been listening to Boy George too long. You've been listening to Boy George, better known as Rush Limbaugh, too long. You actually have taken the Kool-Aid. Even when Bush commits an outright act of thievery, you blame George Soros.
Bush is over. Leave the guy alone. I know he did some bad things, but...
Leave the guy alone. He makes Willie Sutton look like a Boy Scout.
What?
The man sacked the Treasury. What do you mean, leave him alone? Him and Paulson ought to be held up on charges. You know who Hank Paulson is, do you, Lou?
What about tanking Obama for killing it with these prime subprime mortgages? You gonna let him go?
Wait, hold on. Do you know who Henry Paulson is, Lou?
Larry Paul, I know who he is.
Who?
He's just a puppet for the government.
He's a puppet. He runs the Treasury Department.
But he's got no, they had no control over that. He came
to the government from Goldman Sachs. He has been the one dictating in the midnight sessions which one of his friends can convert their companies, their shell companies, into banks in order to receive federal handouts. No, he is the actual architect. Bush doesn't know what's going on, as far as I'm concerned.
Tell me this. Why are we not putting into jail the people who allowed these banks to give the bad loans? Why are we putting Plank and that?
Well, all right. You want to put in jail. It's the whole government. Then it's the Democrats as well. I see where you're coming from. Certainly we understand they forced the banks to give bad loans. I talked about that over a year ago. You don't have any argument with me on that. But that doesn't mean Bush has to go along with it. He could let certain banks fail, couldn't he, Lou?
The thing that started it is this.
Lou, hold on a minute. Lou, have you ever been in business in your life?
Yes.
Okay. Haven't there been times in business you made a mistake and you lost money?
Now,
this is already, the synapses are not, and maybe it was too much seltzer, too much Fox's, you bet. Could have been the corned beef and a collection of 30, 40, 60 years of corned beef fat in the brain. The fact of the matter is, George Bush is still president. Hank Paulson is still Treasury Secretary. I have had failures in my life. As an entrepreneur, as an independent who never relied upon the government, I have been washed up in my life. I had to come back from zero. I've been reduced to ashes in my life because of social engineers who put morons through affirmative action ahead of me. Moronic women, moronic people of color who didn't have anywhere near my qualifications or abilities were given jobs I should have had. They destroyed me, or so they thought. I had to come back from the ashes because of the government's social engineering. The government didn't help me. The government tried to destroy me. So, in other words, if a bank fails, let it go out of business. If a business fails, a brokerage, Lehman Brothers, out of business.
Savage.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender. Pretending that I'm doing well.
Interviews
just
with...
I don't want to hear her. Keep playing the music. I can't beg.
I pretend.
Fat slob from the NPS. Saying they did drug testing on the pilot and crew.
But no one can tell.
Woman does drug testing. All right, turn it off. Why not drug test all of Congress? Maybe that would explain why we're in the state we're in. You know, there's one thing I noticed that Obama's coming to Washington. He has two lovely daughters, and they're going to private school. There hasn't been one word from the liberal press about the fact that his children are not going to public school. Whereas every time a Republican came to town and had children and they went to private school, there was, ooh, how come he doesn't send their children to, what are they, anti-black? How come they're anti-minority? How come they don't send their children to public school? Or how come you don't ask that of Obama? The answer is because it's unsafe to send your children to public school in Washington, D.C., moron. Doesn't matter what your skin color is. Who would want to go there? The people who are there don't want to be there. You know? So that's why you don't hear anything about it. But what's the point of talking about this? No matter what we say, it doesn't matter. The gangsters took it over, and that's it. How much further it goes is anyone's guess. In other words, to what degree does the socialism infect the body politic? Do we lose our freedom of speech entirely? Well, it could happen, and it could happen rapidly. Just as they socialized the banks and the auto industry, there could be a socialization of the media. In other words, if they bailed out radio groups, if they bailed out television groups, and then started, the government starts to dictate who shall and who shall not speak, then you'll know you're living in Venezuela. You understand how it works? They'd silence people who criticize them, and it's the end of freedom of speech. We haven't gone there yet. So then they'll come at it from the other side with the fairness doctrine, according to Mussolini Pelosi. So there it is. I mean, you know, look, we're in for some really, really wild weeks and days ahead of us. How come Circuit City is going under? I don't get it. I don't shop there, but I don't know why they're going under. Once I bought a TV there. I bought in Best Buy. They're like competitors, aren't they, Best Buy and Circuit City? Why would Circuit City go under and not Best Buy? I don't understand how that works. You know, I don't get that. What am I going to do? What am I going to do about any of this stuff? At this point, we're all observers. No one has any influence whatsoever of the small cadre of puppeteers who run things. So you may as well just enjoy it. As I said, nothing we can do. Here's Ramos and Compion, the brave Border Patrol agents who almost got killed defending our borders against a Mexican drug dealer, when they themselves, by the way, are of Mexican descent. And Bush put them in jail for 13 years, and he won't commute their sentences. You talk about a disgraced legacy. The Border Patrol agents who are still in prison for 11 to 13 years. And this is with a Democrat, Feinstein, trying to get a commutation. And Republicans and Bush, the great man of conscience, has not commuted their sentences. Only so far coke dealers and marijuana dealers. How do you figure that one out? Anyone have an answer to that? Don't call me. I'd rather not hear it. It's upside down. The whole thing's upside down. Upside down and backwards. Not a word about Ramos and Compion. Not a word. What about my hero? About why is my hero's sentence not been commuted? I don't know the man. I have nothing in it for me. Randy Cunningham is a Vietnam Air Force pilot war ace. I think he's been in prison 5 years, 4 or 5 years, for a fraction of nothing what he did. $1 million on a house, a busted up Rolls Royce worth about 13 grand. He's been in jail 5 years because of an overzealous Democrat prosecutor. Why has Randy Cunningham not had a pardon from George Bush? Why? Instead, coke dealers and drug dealers. I don't have any words for this. I don't have any words for it. What Paulson has done to this country should give him 10,000 years in prison. Instead, he's held up a Treasury Secretary. And here, Randy Cunningham is still in prison. You don't even know whose name it is. You don't even know who he is. No one cares about him. You know. The pilot, you hear she had the nerve to say that we gave him a drug test. I couldn't believe what I was listening to this morning. But wait, the topper of insanity and inanity and ugliness was Nancy Graceless once again, who, in my opinion, is psychopathic. Look, I don't like too many people in the media. Some I look up to. When I'm really down, I can look up to them. But truthfully, I have no respect at all for this woman. I think is insane. I look at her eyes, and it reminds me of certain older medical textbooks. When I see Nancy Grace on television, my mind races back to my early years in school when I used to race through textbooks on psychopathology. And the eyes match. I can show you pictures. If I could get medical textbooks of the mentally insane in the hospitals of, let's say, 100 years ago, bingo, CNN. She's not alone, but she's the epitome of it. So here is this mental case, in my opinion, goes on the air last night, and the first thing out of her mouth to some shyster lawyer is about suing the airline and the pilot. Listen to clip one.
Will there be lawsuits, or will this be considered an act of God?
Well, there shouldn't be lawsuits, and it is an act of God. But having said that, there's an accident, there's injuries. Some lawyers are going to sue some people, but they're going to say that the plane should be made to be able to withstand the birds. Plus, you may even get a lawsuit from PETA against the airlines for killing the birds.
All right, that's my line. Listen, both of you, in my opinion, 1,000 years in a swamp, up to your neck in a swamp. Oh, if only there could have been tort reform in our lifetime. If only the lawyers could have been reined in. They're out of control. The schools are turning out something like 17 lawyers for every engineer in this country. Just to give you some idea how twisted everything is. And the vermin come out of law schools, and the last thing they're taught in law school is, look within your own family for your first suit. What kind of nation creates parasites with law degrees who do nothing for society except take money from people who created it? Well, then they can run for office if they do it well enough. They can work for the Obama administration. So that's that story. Nancy Grace asks attorney if there'll be lawsuits following the plane crash. That's a crazy person who doesn't say one word about the heroism, didn't see it. The mind is so focused on the negative and so focused on, so twisted. She lawsuits, not the heroism, didn't even see it. The pilot, you know, let's not talk about the pilot. He's a genuine hero. Let's not all take credit for him, you know, like we all know him. We don't know him. Maybe one day I'll get him on the show. He's going to be months till we can get near him, but I've offered... I'll just tell you what I've done. I've offered to put on a private dinner for him and some friends. We can't get to the pilot yet, but he lives in the somewhere in the area. And if any of you people listening to the show are a friend of the pilot, tell the family that when he settles down, I'll take him and 10 of his pilot friends and 10 of my friends to dinner at my favorite Italian restaurant in San Francisco or somewhere, and we'll have a heck of a good time. That's all on me. And we'll give him a stipend for being an all-around great guy, like a something for his kids. I don't know what to do for people like this. We'll do something. What a piece of pile. Now they're already attacking him, the media. Did you see the latest news story? Now they're attacking him. Pilot was given clearance to land at 2 airports but chose to ditch in the river. Already the geniuses who can't even drive a Prius straight, they're on so many psychopathic medications, they're implying he did the wrong thing, that he landed in the water. These people couldn't fly a kite when they were children without crying. North Carolina, Georgia, on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Mike, I'm telling you, I'm calling today because you said something when the Bernie Madoff scandal happened, and you said this is set back to the Jewish community. Well, I'm calling today as a first-generation black American to say that Chesley B. Sullenberger III is the flip side of Bernie Madoff. This is the greatest accomplishment, and who brought it in but a man, one of my brothers. I call any person who's of Jewish descent my brother, because if it wasn't for the Jews, I would not know nothing about my Savior. And I take
Are you saying the pilot is Jewish?
Yes, I am. His name is Chesley B. Sullenberger III.
No, I don't know his religion, nor do I think it's appropriate to even care. But, I mean, I'm glad that you think he's Jewish. I don't think he is, because Jewish people don't name themselves the third or junior. It's not permitted in the religion originally.
Well, the thing about it is he might have Jewish descent or whatever, but I believe that this man is the flip side of Bernie Madoff.
Well, let's put aside the religion. He's the flip side in terms of a soul to Bernie Madoff. Madoff represents everything bad in America, and this man represents all of our hopes and dreams for ourselves and our children. Right, George?
I think so, and I also think I'm going to take it to another level. I think he's the flip side of Barack Obama, because he saved lives, and Barack Obama supports killing lives.
Well, what killing? Oh, you mean the abortion thing?
The abortion thing, abortion on demand, partial birth abortion, and also infanticide, which he voted against 4 times.
I know. He's in favor of a late-term abortion, which is a man who has children can do that, means that he's a doctrinaire, a socialist left-winger, because he should look in his own children's eyes and say, but for the grace of God, I wouldn't have these children.
Right, but here's what he did say about his children.
I don't want to go there. I'm getting a migraine thinking about it. Thanks for the call. My left head. Normally it's the right side that goes out this early. It's only the first hour already. My left eye went out from the show. I don't know what's doing it to me. It must be the pressure of all of this is weighing on me. Why'd the engines fall off the plane? How about this moron who runs the Bank of America? The day he bought or took on that failure and put it as an albatross around the neck of a healthy bank, I knew something was wrong. This guy, Lewis. Does anyone have an answer to that question? Bank of America was a fairly healthy company, and they have a maniac running the company who, out of nowhere, Kenneth D. Lewis, the bank's chairman, purchased Merrill without any due diligence. Now, if you did that and it turned out that Merrill was a bad buy, if you had a business, or rather you were, you'd lose your job. How in the world can this guy, the chairman of Bank of America, have done this? I'll give you the answer. He didn't have to do the due diligence. I'll tell you what I think happened. My opinion now, it's all conjecture, no proof. The former Goldman Sachs chairman, the Treasury Department Iceman, Paulson, went to Lewis and said, look, Merrill's an albatross. It's going down. It's going to die. We don't want it to happen. It's Bob's company. You know Bob. We know him. We have the same tie. So what we're going to do is you're going to take over that company. And he said, wait a minute, I'm going to lose money if we do that. We have a good bank. No, you're going to take over Merrill. And then later on, when the schmucks are focused on the inauguration or Christmas or they're on a ski vacation, we'll give you a $25 billion bailout to pay for it. Okay, deal done. There it is. That's the deal. That's how it was done. I'm giving you, look, I'm giving you a little insight. Do I know if that's how it happened? That's my guess. If I was writing the script of the last days of America before it became a socialist Venezuela, this is how it would have been done. When the absolute crooks got out the long knives and they started carving the country up like this. So you say, well, why didn't he do due diligence? He didn't have to. The guy who told him to do it, told him at the end he'd give him money. Now the Bank of America, which was all of a sudden profitable, is not profitable. Maybe it's another Madoff scheme. You start looking into it. What do you mean profitable? Not. You think anyone knows what's profitable? I can't believe what I'm looking at here. Supply Bank of America with a fresh $20 billion capital injection. What do you mean capital injection? What does that mean, capital injection? They print the money and absorb as much as $98 billion in losses on toxic assets. Hey, I'd love to write off. I would have liked to have written off toxic assets in my life. If I would have done that, they would have taken away my house and my car, and I would have been in jail if I would have wrote off toxic assets. How could this be going on? How is this possible that this is going on right in front of our eyes and nobody's going to jail? Madoff is still in his apartment. The Chicago, the Illinois governor, who was a great fanfare last month, he's still functioning as a governor. He appoints a stooge to be a senator, and that goes through. Do you watch what's going? You see this? Or the ball's coming at us so fast you don't even see it anymore? What's the difference if you saw it? What are you going to do about it? What can you do about it? San Diego, Derek, welcome to the program. What can you do about it?
Hey, Mike, I was just telling you, like, the guy who's screaming that I just started listening to you 3 months ago because our TV went out, and you're the best, man. You tell it just like it is. And, I mean, Rush Limbaugh, I always listened to him, but I never, you know, believed what he said because I knew he was a stooge for, what's his name, Bush.
Yeah, look, Rush Limbaugh is clearly the boy George of the Republican Party. There's no question. And now that the Republican Party is out of business, I don't know where boy George is going to go. I mean, maybe he's going to have to get a new rap, but, you know, he has nobody to front for anymore.
You must have one.
Derek, thank you for the call. I'll be right back. Savage.
Ask me how I knew my true love was true.
Ernie Madoff, the head of the Madoff scheme. There's an article today in the New York Times that's amazing. It's about him and his wife, Ruthie the doll. And the article is entitled, Madoff's Shared Much, Question is How Much. She's married to him for 50 years. She didn't know where the money came from. What, am I supposed to believe that, like in The Sopranos, he kept it from her? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? What kind of country are we living in? So the article ends with, they go to a reunion, a high school reunion, the Madoffs. And everyone looks up to them. Hey, he's a big man. Big man. Oh, he's a big celebrity. And everyone's clamoring to get into Madoff's fund, all of the schmucks from Queens. And they talk about a Mr. Rosenzweig, another classmate of Mr. Madoff, who attended the class reunion. He said in 03 he had called Mr. Madoff for advice about whether to invest with a brokerage firm. They hadn't spoken in decades, but he said Madoff couldn't have been warmer or more gracious with his time. I played a little cute, and I said, what are you up to? And, of course, I knew, because when you're from a small town and someone makes it that big, you know about their accomplishments. And he told me that I'm the... And I said, well, would you handle my money for me, said Schmuck. He said, I'm sorry, we've been closed for 4 or 5 years. By the way, Ruth is sitting right here. Would you like to say hello to her, said Madoff. Ruth is the doll. That's like the Bonnie of the Bonnie and Clyde, in my opinion. Turns out Mr. Rosenzweig, the sucker, had actually taken Ruthie out on a couple of dates when they were 13 years old. You hear this? And then Madoff gets back on the phone and says, look, Donnie, we go back a long way. I'll get you into the fund. He told Mr. Rosenzweig that the minimum investment was $2 million. That was more than Mr. Rosenzweig had. So he asked family members to pitch in. Ultimately, his mother, brother, sister, sister-in-law, and brother-in-law, and an 83-year-old uncle all contributed into the family pool, and they gave it to Madoff. At no time did it feel like he was pulling me in, said Mr. Rosenzweig. It felt like he was doing me a favor. There's a sucker born every minute. So you don't know whether to feel bad for these people or say they got what they deserved. You don't know what to feel. You don't know. I mean, it's a mixed feeling. It's a mixed feeling. But the Major League Goniff, the Goniff injury. By the way, there is no truth to the rumor circulating in airline circles that if the government should find Madoff guilty and seize his assets, including his plane, that the airplane will be renamed Bent 1. There is no truth to that whatsoever. But we're going to keep you posted as to what may happen. We don't know yet. To friends, they were Bernie and Ruth, or Ruth and Bernie. After nearly 50 years of marriage, they worked the same office. They travel together and they dine together night after night, just the two of them. They came once or twice a week for about 22 years, and for the last five, I could count on one hand the number of times they came with another couple, said some Italian guy in an Italian restaurant in Manhattan. They always wanted a quiet table in the back, just the two of them. Sounds like me. I always want a quiet table in the back, but in San Francisco, there's no such thing. The only quiet table in the back is in your own house in an undershirt. I can't take it anymore. I can't go out. I just can't go out. I try Monday night. I try Tuesday night. There they are, the coloring books and the Crayolas. What is going on in this country? Why are the children perennially out of school? Wherever I go, no matter what time I go in a restaurant, there it is, the Crayola and the child. Now, I have nothing against children, but I go out to dinner 9 o'clock at night. I expect a moment of peace. Everywhere I go, it's the Crayola crowd. Don't they have homework? Are they all on drugs? Why are they out that late? I don't know where they're even coming from. What are they, like, from France or Italy on vacation? I don't know where they're from. Why are they always off? Is it some German socialist holiday? Everywhere I go in San Francisco, the Crayolas and the crayons with an instructional parent that everyone has to hear how smart the parent is and how smart their child is. Who was the first president who socialized America, Marvin? FDR, Daddy. Good! Give him another whipped cream. I don't know what to do anymore. That's why I stay home. There they are, Bernie and Ruth Madoff, in Mexico in May. Worked together, but it is unclear whether she was privy to his funds' finances. Are you kidding me? Where do you expect she thinks the money came from when it came out today that he never made a trade altogether? There's no record he ever bought any stock.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Friday on the Savage Nation. We're watching the world go around. It gets sicker by the day, madder by the day, more corrupt by the day. I don't know about you, but I'm jaundiced. I mean, I was a cynic by the time I was 8 years old, but this is too much for me. Today, a slob from the NTSB gets up to NTSB, and the slob holds a press conference where she says they gave a drug test to the pilot and crew. You hear this? Why don't you give her a little drug test and give a drug test to everyone in the government instead of giving him a drug test? The whole world sees heroism. With their own eyes, she gave him a drug test. The slob, the government slob. And the New York Times, of course, keeping in accord with its view of the world, never featured the pilot because he was a white male pilot who saved the day. Instead, they said crew did superb job. They had to make sure they included women. Whew. I wonder, you know, from sandals to sandals in three generations, that certainly applies to the Sulzbergers. That's an old British phrase, from sandal to sandals in three generations, meaning the grandfather starts out poor. The next generation makes it, and the third generation already they're back into the sandals. They lost everything. This Sulzberger, what he did to this paper. I had an argument with someone today over this, that the papers are dying. I said because of their editorial policies. He said, no, it's because it's an old form of the media. Nobody reads them anymore. They get their news on the web. I said, well, okay, it's a mixture of things. I said, but if the newspapers exhibited what the newspaper buyer believes to be true, they might buy it. He said, no, you're wrong. I said, I'm wrong? Today they're buying newspapers to get pictures of Obama in the inauguration. The lefties can't wait to get pictures in the newspaper. But all these years, if they had showed something that was patriotic and American, people might have bought the paper. But every day it was gay this, gay that, lesbian this, lesbian that. America no good, America no good. Soldiers no good, police no good. Criminal misunderstood, cops evil. Every day the same things. It wants to buy that garbage. But I can't get my mind off that one story, and I didn't mean to go back to it, but I'm going to go back to it for a minute. I don't know why I'm getting drawn back to it. I just posted it from the Times up on michaelsavage.com, and it's about Madoff and his wife, Ruthie. Why is it obsessing me? I was obsessed by this when it first came out. I couldn't stop watching the story. So she was the wife for 50 years. They met when they were she was from Queens College, no less, on top of it all. And she wore a plain wedding band, not a big diamond. She was not like a trophy wife, you know, with the rich guy like they all had in Palm Beach. The little old men, 70, with the tall blondes, 30. I read that book about the madness under the royal palms. Wow, those prenups are something. They married the young girl. The prenup says $1 million a year for each year you're with me, plus interest, minus the possessions on top of... I can't believe it. How can you go to bed with someone after that? How could you have a marriage with a prenup like that? I come from another age. I'm from another universe. If somebody wanted to lay a prenup on a girl of my age, I mean, like that, who would marry a guy like that, a psycho? Of course, we all had nothing anyway, so it didn't matter. There's no such thing as a prenup in the culture I came from, because no one had anything. You went into it with nothing. You went into marriage with a hope and a prayer. So, but the idea of a prenup. Look, if you're 70 years old and you're 5'2" and you got 1 foot in the grave, and a 32-year-old beauty loves you, you know she's not marrying you for your body. So I guess you need a prenup. But wow, they're so specific. She gets $1 million for each year that she stays with the corpse, plus and then minus the dozen. I don't know how they figure it out in the book like that. The woman usually is in it until she gets the amount she wants. That's if she's got a kind heart and doesn't just outright have him killed. These women, you could see them from a mile away, by the way. You can smell this on a certain type of woman. Remember I tried to talk about it the other day, that horsey voice, that L.A. utterly fake sincere voice, that horsey fake sincere voice. I don't know how to describe it. I'm as close as I can get. I have a limited ability to describe it. There's a certain, and they always say, there's a new thing, the so much thing. That came out like 2 years ago. Thank you so much. Watch out for that so much. When you hear that, you better reach for your Glock. You know you're going to be cleaned out. There's also the lips are too big from the injections. Never mind the breasts. We won't even go there. That's so garish. It's unbelievable. Has that died out yet, breast implants? That is so ugly. You know, you think about that. Why does a woman need a breast implant? If a woman has a naturally large body, fine. Okay, it's beautiful the way it moves, her body. But the fake ones never move properly. They're horrible looking. These young women who are an old man, how do they live with themselves? Well, okay, it's prostitution like any other. It's expensive, you know, high-priced prostitution. That's been said before. But they're all little guys from Queens, 5'2", 80 years old. Oh, I was focused on the prostitutes in the government for a while, and I got sidetracked. But you know, what's the point of talking about it? So they're robbing us blind? They've turned the banking industry they've socialized the banking industry like Venezuela? They socialized the auto industry like Venezuela? And we're complaining about Chavez 6 months ago. Oh, he socialized the banks. No, don't let him socialize the banks. Rush Limbaugh, the boy George of the Republican Party, was attacking Chavez. But now that George Bush did it, I guess there's no comments about it. I want to find an article about the Madoffs that she was, you know, they met in high school, Queens College. She has a plain wedding band. They went out to dinner every night with no friends in this Italian restaurant. They sat in the back. You actually believe she knew nothing about it? How could she not have known it? How is it possible that Ruth Madoff could not have known anything about her husband's shenanigans? We can't talk about it. I mean, what are you going to say? She didn't. She didn't. Yeah, it's up on my website. Madoff shared much. Question is how much. That picture that they published that we put up on the website for the New York Times is worth $1 million. There's so much in this picture. of Ruthie and Bernie, Bernie and Ruthie, Ruthie and Bernie, Bernie and Ruthie. What a picture. What a picture this is. You got to see this. Here they are at a picnic table in May. Worked together, but it's unclear whether she was privy to his fund's finances. So there's Ruthie wearing a plain wedding band, even though they're worth apparently billions. She got a pack of Marlboro. She's got the white wine. He's got the Diet Coke. He's got to stay focused. So he drinks the Diet Coke, at least that day. We can't generalize. She's on the white wine and the cigarettes. She doesn't know. She doesn't know how he makes the money, like Carmela Soprano. I can't tell you. Don't ask. Because if you ask, then you... Oh, I see. She wrote a kosher cookbook. Well, they also said that because they had this, like, Hamish-er marriage, you know, down-home, homey marriage. She wears it. Listen, her taste in clothing run toward Bergdorf and Bonnie's, but she isn't a flashy or pretentious dresser. She wears a simple wedding band rather than the oversized diamond that is the ring of choice among New York's moneyed elite. Okay? So they said that actually was part of the con. In other words, her mere presence helped make Mr. Madoff the most reassuring of archetypes, the devoted husband, which had a way of preempting questions about his integrity. You understand what I'm saying or not? In other words, if he was sitting there with a young chick, they say, well, I don't know, maybe he's a little, you know, con man there. So an ex-litigator says, I didn't get any odor from him, and I'm not sure she helped. But Bernie's got this pleasant, sweet wife of 30 or 40 years, not some young chick. It somehow added to his credibility. 3 years younger than her husband, Mrs. Madoff, Ruthie to you, attended Queens College, where she earned a degree in psychology. After college, I married Bernie Madoff, FRHS class of 55. She wrote in an update for the 50th reunion of the Far Rockaway High School in Queens. Bernie and I worked together in the investment business he founded in 1960. Mrs. Madoff also earned a Master's of Science in Nutrition at NYU. Oh, my God. And co-edited Great Chefs of America, Cook Kosher. That's some tongue tie, that one is. That would have been a hot seller. Over 175 recipes from America's greatest restaurants. I would say that book sold probably as well as Nancy Pelosi's book on couture. Great Chefs of American Cook Kosher. Over 175 recipes from America's greatest restaurants. Must have sold about the same number as Nancy Pelosi's life story. I'll be right back. Savage.
You made me cry when you said goodbye. Ain't that a shame? My tears feel like rain.
Yeah. Miss Fats, you know that I keep a picture of him smiling down upon me in my studio, my home studio. One of my home studios. One of my four home studios.
You broke my heart
constantly.
When you said,
he is such a great entertainer. It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. We're commenting on American life, whatever there is of it. Apparently there's a sign of life here and there. Celebrities losing millions on their multi-million dollar homes. Celebrities who bought homes during the housing boom aren't having an easier time selling them than the average homeowner. And when stars have to lower asking prices, blah, 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 they're often taking multi-million dollar baths. California, New York, where many celebs live, are among the hardest hit states, says blah, 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 blah. 10% down, da, 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 da. Oh, yeah, Shaquille O'Neal's dump. I saw that house on Star Island. Who would buy these places? You see, did you see, what's the guy with the hair, the boxing guy with the hair? I forget his name. What's the guy with Don King's house he's trying to unload for 3 years now? What is the difference if they owned it? Who would want it? They usually run into the ground anyway. Well, they overpaid. The fact of the matter is, if you bought anything after a certain point, you're in trouble. What's the difference? Photos. See how much these celebrities' house prices are down. Ooh, let's see. Let's see how much they're losing. Who cares what they're losing? We're all losing. The massive Shaquille O'Neal is going to take a big hit. His Star Island Miami Mega Monster Mansion is now on the market for $25 million, down from the original $35 million. The almost 20,000-square-foot pad is on the market after having apparently gone to contract back in November for $19 million, when it was on the market for $29 million. Shaq bought the house in 2004 from South American soda magnate Juan Carlos Correa for $18.8 million. I was in that house. I once looked at it like a year or two ago. I won't say why. If he gets, in my estimate, $14-15 million, he'll be lucky. So, you know, what he paid, doesn't matter what anyone paid. What do you think Bernie Madoff's house is going to be worth? You know, I mean, what is the difference? What's the difference what they paid? It's what the market will bear. In 05, Jessica Simpson paid $5.3 million for a five-bedroom, seven-bath, two-story home in Beverly Hills, once owned by Ellen DeGeneres. The Corcoran Group says Jessica has lost at least $1.6 million on the property to date. Okay, so what, are you going to cry for her? What's the next one? Who's this guy? I find it interesting to look at these things, just for the heck of it. Like, I mean, it's not that I care. What do you think Boy George's cardboard box must be worth in London? The cardboard box he was whipping guys in. Only in the Western world could a guy of that level of degeneracy be held up as a role model. You hear? Boy George. Who is this character? Gwen Stefani? Who's this creep? And Gavin Ross? I never heard of them. Spent $15 million in 06 to purchase a Beverly Hills mansion that once belonged to Jennifer Lopez. The 10,000-square-foot mansion sits on a two-acre plot of land in an exclusive gated community in Beverly Hills. Stephanie and Ross will be lucky to sell it now for $12 million. Oh, I know the house. I know the two-acre plot. They paid $15 and it's only worth $12? Wow, went down 20%. That's if they could find the $12. They got to find a buyer for it at that price. You know, maybe I'll buy a new house now. How about George Bush's house in Crawford, Texas? What do you think that's worth now that he's out of office? $12? Prince Bandar bin Sultan had an Aspen ski lodge called Hala Ranch, which has been listed in the past at $135 million. Good friend of the president's, by the way. It's larger than the White House, has 15 bedrooms, 16 bathrooms, blah, 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 blah. 100 acres on the top of a mountain. Prince Bandar has lost $27 million of value on his property. $27 million means someone's going to pay $109 million for it. Don't be ridiculous. No one's paying that anymore. Those days are over. Those mega mansions of that level, who's going to buy them? The oligarchs are going bankrupt. So where's the market for this kind of thing? And same with yachts. Take a look at yachts. They can't unload them. Look at that market. Look at that market. The manufacturers, you know, started producing some of these beautiful yachts. I'm not talking the mega yachts. We're not talking 150 feet. If you look at a boat, a 50-foot, 55-foot, 60, that's not a yacht anymore. It was 30 years ago. But to me, it's still a yacht. They're gorgeous. Let's say its value is $2 to $3 million a boat like that. Many of these were started 18 months ago at the height of the insanity. So they're coming out of the factories now, or they're almost about to come out of the factories. Where's the buyer for them? There's no market for these boats. The market's dried up, so unfortunately, a lot of these incredibly skilled craftsmen are going to be out of work. I mean, I'd say there should be a bailout for the boating industry, if you want to know the truth, to keep craftsmen working. I'd bail them out. That's an American industry making yachts. Why don't you bail out the American boating industry instead of bailing out useless arts institutes with deadbeat creeps in New York City with the National Endowment for the Arts they're giving money to? You hear? NPR's getting a bailout. Did you know that? They're getting a huge cash infusion from the incoming Obama communists. Because all the creeps at NPR who never held a job in their life are going to sing his praises. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, what's the difference? What do I have in callers here? I got great callers. The pilot got me so mad when she said that they gave him a drug test. Did you see that fat slob from the NTSB have the nerve in that deadpan voice to say that they gave the pilot and crew drug tests? Did anyone hear that but me? I was so outraged. I almost threw a piece of soft sushi at the TV screen, but I didn't want the dogs to eat it because it was so bad. I was afraid they'd get sick from it. Yes, I'm back to sushi. I said I wouldn't eat it. I'm a hypocrite in that regard. But it's not true sushi in the sense of raw fish. It's California roll, they call it. It's fake crab. Like fake crab I can eat. I don't like real crab. I don't even like crustaceans anymore. They're all creepy. I don't know where they come from. They remind me of the government. Every time I see a like the kind of animal I'm thinking. Well, I don't eat lobster. I feel bad for them. Some of them could live 135 years. Why do you want to kill it? What happened to me with lobster was 5 years ago, I went to an Italian restaurant in North Beach, and a guy got me a lobster, which I said I didn't want, and he held it up for me, cut its arms off. I felt so bad that the creature was alive, still trying to swing its stumps around to defend itself. I felt like killing the guy who cut its arms off. I don't know. Something in me. I got upset. That's animal cruelty. It's one thing to kill it fast and eat it. But to leave it with stumps and the thing still trying to defend itself, it had more dignity than the hook.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around 10 o'clock tonight.
It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. You know the number, you know the website. I'm sick of it anyway. All right, turn it off. This is too old already. It's like Grandpa's Rock and Roll. There's an article by Joel Stein in the LA Times. It's funny. I've had Joel Stein's articles up on my website before. He's actually very funny. And he wrote an article today, Relics of the Good Old Days, Dog Gyms, Hedge Funds, Stainless Steel. What were we thinking? Joel, welcome to the Savage Nation. Terrific writing, Joel. I really enjoy your articles.
Oh, my God. Thanks so much. And I'm glad to be on Rock and Roll Friday. It's exciting.
Joel, tell my audience what you wrote about tasting menus, the idea of them in these non-gaudy times that are coming.
I've been kind of thinking about this for, six, 7 years, because every time I was lucky enough to go to a restaurant and order the tasting menu, I just kind of pictured future generations or people in other countries just kind of looking at me and just shaking their heads in disgust. And I figured there's going to come a time when things turn around in the economy and a lot of the things that we're doing now are just going to, like the Gilded Age, it's just going to look bad.
Yes.
In retrospect.
Yeah, I love what you wrote. You said the idea that an appetizer, entree, and dessert wasn't enough, that you had to taste everything, was a pretty clear sign we were on our way toward being a fat and dead nation.
Yeah, they feel like Caligula would have looked at a tasting menu and been like, no, too much.
Yeah. What is this? You said, I went with four people to Per Se in New York, and two of them barfed as soon as we got home. To be fair, it was the most delicious barf they've ever had. Then you go on to stainless steel. What do you have to say about stainless steel?
I'm legitimately confused by stainless steel, even though the house I bought has a kitchen with some of it in it.
Of course.
Of course it did. You don't have a choice, I mean, at this point.
Right.
Yeah, I went to go buy like a tiny little refrigerator, like one of those college dorm ones for like below my house outside near the grill. And even those, like it was hard to get one that wasn't stainless steel.
Yeah, everything became, it says every appliance we touched had to be covered in stainless steel, as if we were low-rent King Midases. I love that line. You said how the lamest of metals became the way to show off your wealth is going to confuse the heck out of archaeologists. No, they actually had gold and silver and plastics of many colors. They were just easily distracted by cheap, shiny things. You write, thank God the recession came because we were about 2 years from having to sit on cold stainless steel toilet seats.
Which, by the way, I think is what, to give you an idea of how great stainless steel is, I think prison toilet seats are made of stainless steel.
They are. That's right, because they're safer.
Not such
now,
a
you, what do you have to say about the entire city of Las Vegas?
First of all, I love Las Vegas, but I forgot what I wrote. But Las Vegas is kind of the symptom. That, you know,
here's what you wrote. You said, was the plan to base an economy on nothing but eating, gambling, and strip clubs? What kind of insane utopian thought thought that would work?
Yeah.
Then you have a few things to you have things to say about Dasani, spas, $50 T-shirts, Crocs, Bravo, hedge funds, designer jeans, Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and dog gyms. Do you remember what you wrote about any of those, Joel?
No, the truth is, this is such an easy thing to do that I had a list of about 50 things, and I just kind of picked, 10 that wound up fitting in that space.
Yeah, I love your thing on Williamsburg, because I remember what it was like when I was younger. You said Williamsburg, Brooklyn, paying $3,000 a month to live in Manhattan, exactly as near as the Sweat Hogs lived. You can wear librarian glasses, play in a band, and go to readings in Iowa City, too. Either way, you're not in New York. It's true. Hedge funds. What exactly were you hedging against? It wasn't a recession. You had no idea what a hedge fund was other than rich people had them, so you wanted one. This is the same failed logic that led Ford to buy Jaguar. How are your articles being received in Los Angeles, which is sort of the anti... I mean, you epitomize sort of the anti-glitz with your articles.
Yeah, but I know enough about the glitz that makes me one of these, L.A. jerks as well. I get it from both sides. I get people, on the far right kind of yelling at me that, like, people have a right to buy whatever they want. You shouldn't judge them. That's the capitalism.
You mean they don't even understand that it's humorous?
Yeah, well, they're angry at me about the overall point I'm making, which is fine, humorous or not. But then there's, people from, I get it from both sides, and I'm used to it.
Spas, you wrote, we paid $100 to be rubbed with hot rocks covered with mud and wrapped in seaweed just because we were curious about what they'd feel like. Nobody did any of those things twice. It got so insane that the massages that gave you sexual satisfaction were actually the cheaper ones.
It's insane, though. They're like, nobody I know has ever enjoyed being covered in mud, which is like, $100, $150 bucks. But, the happy ending is like 50-something, I think.
I remember when I first moved to Marin County 30 years ago so I had to go to the mud baths up in Sonoma. To begin with, I'm a New Yorker, so to the idea of dirt on my body was just anti-genetic. Joel, I go up there, and they put me in this dirty, filthy mud bath. I couldn't wait to get out of it. I didn't understand why people did this.
Was there a woman that convinced you to do this? How did this go down?
I don't even want to go into that. All I know is they shoveled mud on me. And then eventually I said to them, wait a minute, do you use new mud on each person, or is it old mud? Because if you're detoxing people, in other words, if the toxins come out in the mud, so you're going to shovel their mud on top of me, I'm getting their toxins? They had no answer for that. Because that's a lot of mud. If you have to put new mud in each time a person goes into the mud bath, Joel, think about how much mud they'd have to keep on the property.
I've heard that, I've not done that myself, but I've heard there are several uncomfortable days where you're finding mud in places you don't want to find mud afterwards.
Oh, my God. You mean where they're getting it from or where they're dumping it?
It's just where they're dumping it. No, on your body. I think you just kind of shed mud. Maybe.
Oh, you mean what people find it coming out of their body?
Yeah, like
Joel. How often do you write articles for the LA Times?
I do the LA Times on Fridays, and then Time Magazine. I do a column every other week.
Really terrific stuff, Joel. I really appreciate your writing. I hope you can join us again on the Savage. You do it on Fridays, you said?
I do Rock and Roll Fridays.
Rock and Roll. Maybe you can kind of come on an irregular basis and join us for some rock and roll on the Savage Nation. You know, we're heard live in your hometown now on KGIL.
You're heard live in every town, aren't you?
Well, it's a national show, but I've been bounced around a little in L.A. I had people who loved me, then people didn't love me. As you can well imagine, like anyone else, you attract a lightning when you're a lightning rod.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm glad.
Joel, hey, your articles are great. Keep it up. I really love them.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for being on the show. Really great to find a young guy who can write so well. And I think he's married, too, on top of it all, with children on top of it. So that's another reason. I was a little, you know, I was a little skittish, but it's amazing. Good columnist. I hope that paper, God, I hope they don't go out of business. Some papers shouldn't, even if their politics are bad. They're good newspapers. They have some good columnists. You know, they're like a national resource here. Some papers are like national treasures. You know, we don't want to lose all the newspapers, do we? All you want is me on the radio and Boy George. My boy George, me and Leprechaun's off. He went out a bit. He's like the Milwaukee Gazette. Tom Hanks says supporters of Proposition 8 on Americans. Oh God, Tom Hanks. Oh, come on, Tom. I knew you were an actor, but gee, I thought maybe there was a sign of life somewhere between those ears. Oh, because we're against homosexual marriage, we're an American, and the people who are into sodomy are American. Wake up, Tom. You know you're brainwashed. Minneapolis Star Tribune files Chapter 11. Unbelievable. Isla Fisher stars in sexy photo shoot as she reveals plan to wed Sacha Baron Cohen. I don't know who she is, but she's a pretty girl. She's marrying Borat. He's like a regular normal guy, a tall guy from London. Fabulously, you know, what's his name? Borat? I don't even know his real name. Is his name Sacha Baron Cohen? That's his real name, Borat? He's a regular, incredibly talented man. He's what Howard Stern wishes he could be, in other words. What Howard Stern aimed to be at his top, and he never was, Sacha Baron Cohen is on a regular basis today. He's a very talented man. He's getting married to Australian actress Isla Fisher. We have that picture. I never heard of her. Chinese mom strangled son because of population law. I don't even want to talk about it. Mystery surrounds removal of young Adolf Hitler. What is that all about? How could a state remove a child? Let's say you hated Adolf Hitler. Who would love him but a nut? And let's say you named the child Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler Campbell. How could you remove a child for a name? You can't do that. How could a government do that? That'd be like, what if someone named their child Muhammad and you have something against Muhammad? Or let's say you named the child Moses Campbell. What, they're going to remove him because Moses was a anti-Proposition 8? In 2 years, Obama will say you got to remove a child, anyone named Moshe, because Moshe was a homophobe? Think about it. Think about the dangerous precedent for the state of New Jersey to remove the kid named Adolf Hitler Campbell. Who's next? Moshe Campbell. I said, listen to what I'm saying. Anyone named Moses, that could be Moses or any of the derivatives thereof. Moses, Michael, Moshe, right? Morris, they're all derivatives of Moses. I'm sorry, we're removing your child from the home, even though his name is Morris, because it turns out that you're homophobic if you name a child for Moses. Is that where you want to go? Be careful where you go. This government's getting really overly intrusive. Oh, wow, it's out of control. 1-800-449-8255. Beware the big government tipping point, says the Wall Street Journal. Madoff shared much. Question is how much? You got to read that article we linked up from the New York Times. Some of their articles are phenomenal. There's another one there on the plane thing. Planes designed to survive water landings. I knew someone who owned a private jet, and he told me how expensive it was and why. Because each item on a jet, in order to pass the FAA, you know, requirements, like each seat has to be made three times and then destroyed and has to survive fire. So in other words, like even the galley on an airplane, a private plane, every item in the galley has to be able to crash, survive, not catch fire. So they have to make a mock-up of it for the FAA. Then they have to wreck it and make another one until they actually go and make it. That's why everything's so expensive. And the reason the engines fell off is they're supposed to. See, engines are supposed to fall off a plane upon crashing, the new ones, because then they spin away from the fuel tanks, which are in the wings. So why they were looking for the... You know, the NTSB put a lot of doubts in people's minds. She's a monster for doing that. We gave the pilot a drug test. You hear this? You fat slob, you. You ought to be given a drug test and a funnel and hot lead. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Friendly shades of night are falling. It's twilight time. Out of the mist, your voice is calling. Tis twilight time.
It is a mad, mad world, I'll tell you. A mad world. So the media coverage of the plane crash was to be expected. You know, they wanted death. They wanted bodies floating in the water. You could practically see them, their disappointment, particularly the empty suit, Wolf Blitzer. I mean, he was almost in tears that everyone survived. They didn't see people being fished out. But the bottom of the bottom was Nancy Grace, in my opinion. You got to hear this woman. This is what came out of her mouth last night in clip one.
Will there be lawsuits, or will this be considered an act of God?
Let's stop. Okay, that's enough. That's all. That's it. The lemon cake almost came up on me hearing this. How much can I take? Is it any wonder I need a drink at night when I listen to this? Look, I'm in the media, okay? But part of my job, in addition to being a watchdog for you of the government, a lot of good it does, I'm pointing out the biggest theft in history and a lot of good. It stopped because I pointed it out. And I'm not the only one saying it's the largest theft in the history of the world. But what good is it? I'm a watchdog. Big deal. I'm a watchdog. So I'm calling one thief after another out, and a lot of good it does. Because no one's representing us. It's hopeless right now. And it's going to get worse. But part of my job is also to watch the watchers, the media. You know, who will watch the watchers? Me. I'll watch the watchers. See, here you got a nutcase asks if there's going to be a lawsuit. Instead of saying, thank God there was a pilot with the skill, went to the Air Force, like I did, will there be a lawsuit? Then you get a fat slob from the NTSB today, because the first thing she says out of her mouth is, we gave the pilot a drug test. You hear this? I don't believe the government media complex. Grand Rapids, Jose, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, follow on that. I'm so indignant about that treatment. And it's typical of how feminized the media has become. And that's the syndrome. That's exactly why they hated George Bush from the beginning, regardless of how we feel of his...
Well, Jose, let's not bring Bush into it. When that slob from the NTSB came out today with her deadpan voice and said that we gave the pilot a drug test and the crew as well, if we had a sane media, they would have called foul ball. There would have been a visceral reaction saying, whoa, wait a minute, the guy was a hero. They should have said something to her. Who is she? She's a nobody bureaucrat.
But this is why they hate the guy, because they cannot understand what it is like to make a decision in less than 3 minutes.
Jose, you want to bring it to Bush, and I don't want to go there right now. I'd rather leave that alone for now. I think it speaks for himself. I know you're a great caller, but we're going to get sidetracked. We're going to lose you know what I'm saying? Tulsa, Stephen, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Savage, it's an honor to speak with you. And
now
yes,
you're talking. Now we're on the right beam here. So what'd you call about today?
I just want to say it's an honor. And yes, they are coming like fastballs. It's happening so fast we can't keep up with it.
Yes, that's right. One insult after another. They're coming at us so fast. bailout after bailout after bailout, corruption, scandal after scandal, one thing after another, the people are reeling from it.
We're sick and tired of it, Michael. We're sick and tired of it. But I want to say thanks for being a watchdog. Man, you're our savior out here.
Right. You see, at least we can still say what's going on. The day that comes that I'm no longer on the air because Mussolini, Pelosi, and her gang want me off the air, and they do it by passing some cockamamie law, which they call fairness, you'll know you're living in a dictatorship, an absolute dictatorship.
Absolutely right, sir. And that day is probably going to happen, but I'm going to enjoy every day of listening to you. I've tried to get through for years, man. I tell you what, I live in Osage County in Oklahoma. I didn't know that they had passed the new personal tax of $100 a year. They delivered that out to a sheriff and charged me double of $200.
$100 a year personal tax they added on when? While you were sleeping?
I never knew it happened.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to help lighten the load. I'm sending you a free copy of my book, Psychological Nudity. Because the picture, now the dogs are popular. Stay in the line. Teddy and I are. Maybe Teddy should get a movie contract. Did you see that article before the show, the hour ends? Did you see the article about a toy poodle, like Teddy's size, was left in a car 19 days in a parking garage without food and water, and he lived? Oh, they're tough. I had a new respect for my dog this morning. Same dog. If I leave this dog 10 minutes, he starts screaming at me. He is so attached to me, I'm frightened. I've had other dogs, and I've been attached to my other dogs, but this is almost borderline. This is already starting to get me worried. He's at my feet in the bed. I get up, he gets up. I go to the bathroom, he's in the bathroom. I take a shower, he wants to go in the shower. I get in the car to go to the boat, he gets in the car to go to the boat. He likes the big boat, he doesn't like the little boat. I eat, he eats. I like this, he likes that. I never saw anything like it, like an attachment. You don't know what to do because they're made to die before you. And the reason nature designed it, that dogs die before you, hopefully, it's actually very intelligent. Because the reason they die before you is so that they're not left without someone to care for them. You get it? I mean, look, if you die before them, who would take care of your dog? Think about it. I mean, you're heartbroken when the dog dies, but it's the way of all life. I mean, the way of all flesh. It's supposed to be that way. They die, and then you get another one. But if you died, who's going to take care of it? You know, that's... But I don't know what to do with this one. I'm having a little bit of a feeling like cheating on him thing. Because I never knew the poodle breed till I got him. I always thought poodles were like, know that if a poodle is untrimmed, they look like little bears. So I got an 11-pound dog, Teddy. This guy stands on his rear feet when he wants to eat. He looks just like a bear. Anyway, great dog. Smartest animal I ever had. And I had a border collie who I thought was amazing. I had a Sheltie I thought was amazing. I had a lot of mutts in my life. But now that I've got into the poodle breed, I got to tell you, when I see a standard poodle go by, my heart jumps. Like I fall. I want a standard poodle, but I can't bring a standard poodle into the house with Teddy because his domination, you know, his dominant position in the dog kingdom. Think about it. He's running the household like as the chief dog. He has a little 2-pound schmucky girlfriend in the house. A rescue poodle, they call her. It's not rescue. He paid a fortune. She's just a, you know, bad genes. Let's put it to you that way. But you feel bad for it. It's 2 pounds. He's the movie star. She's like Miss Dummy. She follows him around. He jumps. She lays there like a, all right, but you feel bad for her. Together they make a whole. One is smart. The other stupid. One's a showman. The other one's, you can leave it for a day in the house. No, whatever. So if I brought in a full poodle now, a full standard poodle, okay, it would start out as a puppy. That is true. But before long, Teddy would witness this thing growing into something 10 times his size. How would he tolerate that? He'd be heartbroken. I mean, I have read that little dogs sometimes continue to be the leader of the pack anyway. I know they're pushy. You know, we could see that in a guy like Madoff. We understand that. But I don't know if it would work if I got the big dog in the house with the little dog. If in time, then I'm afraid the big dog could kill him. I don't know what could happen. So now I'm secretly waiting. Well, okay, eventually he'll die and I'll get one. And I get so guilty when I think that. Like, oh, God. Don't. There's years left, many years left. Don't start thinking about that. That's years from now. But my mind is right. I see a car go by with a standard poodle in the back, like brown. It's as big as a person. And with the face smiling, it looks like a human being sitting back there, but nicer. They don't rob you. They don't cheat on you. No inheritance. Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We understand Americans are struggling, that people are out of work, but that's no excuse to rush to judgment and really take $350 billion from the very people that we're concerned about. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We are inheriting an enormous budget deficit. Some estimates over $1 trillion. That's before we do anything. And so we understand that we've got to provide a blood infusion to the patient right now to make sure that the patient is stabilized. And that means that we can't worry short term about the deficit. We've got to make sure that the economic stimulus plan is large enough to get the economy moving.
Well, I obviously have made a decision to make sure the economy doesn't collapse. I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system.
Now that the Bank of America has the majority of its shares owned by the government, the United States of America stands at a perilous crossroads. The largest bank in our country is now government-owned, and we appear to be careening towards what the media refers to as nationalization. What it is, in fact, is a socialization of the banks, a communizing of the entire financial system of the country. George W. Bush pushed us most of the way towards this leftist goal, and now Citigroup is being socialized as well. They are the largest contributor to Obama's inauguration party, so it looks like we're moving towards complete communism. How do we get to this point? The truth is that those who proclaim themselves to be capitalists were never really capitalists. They were only hucksters. They claimed to be for free enterprise, but all they wanted was more money by whatever means necessary. In this case, it was by direct theft from the American people. So when their own greed and stupidity caught up with them, they came running to the government for a bailout, abandoning principles for avarice. And what elite group will we be joining as we socialize the banks? Why, England, France, and Venezuela have all gone the same way. All the old cold warriors can rail against communism all they like, but the bankers have suddenly realized that communism can be profitable too. It's just a different way of robbing the people. Okay, moving on. You all know how I feel about the turn to the left Hollywood has made over the years. At one time, Hollywood used to make films that had real heroes and morals, the kind of films you could feel good about being an American. Well, Oscar time is upon us again, and joining us today is James Herson with Newsmax.com to talk about what he sees out there for the Oscars. And if there's anything out now that he feels is really worth watching, James Herson, welcome back to the Savage Nation. So what are your predictions for the Oscars this year?
Well, Michael, it's the usual. People are obsessed with the Oscars. Part of the reason is because once these A-list actors reach a certain level, they have enough money, they have enough fame, and what they need is respect. So the pre-Oscar season, of course, is a very serious season, reflected by the fact that we've had so many films about Nazis at Christmas and other aspects of the Oscars. But we have a better crop of films this year, I believe, than we've had in the last few years, because the Oscar voters have had to deal with films that are so dark and dismal. And one of the concerns they have is the ratings. Last year, if you remember, the best picture was No Country for Old Men. And the ratings were about 31 million viewers, which was the lowest rated in history. If you look at 10 years ago, Titanic drew almost twice that. And you think of the great Oscar-winning best pictures of the past, like Ben-Hur, like West Side Story, Lord of the Rings, The Last Emperor, that these were films that entertained and had artistic content and drew big audiences to the Oscars.
Which film would that be this year?
Michael, clearly that film is The Dark Knight, the Batman sequel that has had, it is now the second highest grossing film of all time, threatening the highest grossing film, which is Titanic. And The Dark Knight, obviously, it has all this Oscar attention, primarily because of Heath Ledger and his tragic death. And he will get a nomination for supporting actor, and he will be the favorite to win. I think I can predict that safely. It's not clear whether the film itself will get a nomination, because, frankly, there's a bias in the Oscars against comic book originated movies. And so in that sense, I don't really believe that The Dark Knight will get the nomination.
But what about the best actor and actress this year?
Well, the best actor, Michael, is very interesting, because a guy who really has been a living personification of the comeback kid is actor Mickey Rourke, who, if you remember, in the 1980s was a sex symbol, was on top, A-lister, very successful. He had fallen so low that he was literally destitute and living off of a friend, and he was forced to take up boxing. So as a combination of boxing and plastic surgery, really it looked like he was washed up, and he's really come back with a film that is a metaphor of his life about a washed-up wrestler titled The Wrestler. And Mickey Rourke's a guy who, during this period where people are supposed to be campaigning for the Oscar voters, he's come out and defended George W. Bush and attacked the Bush haters as being short-sighted, which is probably not the smartest thing to do. Plus, Mickey Rourke is up against the most politically correct nominee who will get the nomination, and that is Sean Penn for his portrayal of Harvey Milk. And Sean Penn will probably win, even though I think if Sean Penn doesn't win, the other politically correct nominee will be Frank Langella for Frost Nixon. So, I think Mickey Rourke ought to be the guy to win that. In terms of the Best Actress, the Best Actress Award tends to be, in these days, an anti-glamour award. It's women who make themselves look ugly. If you think of Charlize Theron gaining weight, putting on weight makeup, and playing a crazed lesbian serial killer, she wins. But in this year, you have a number of those who, you know, wash up their makeup. And the one who washes off the most makeup is Meryl Streep for a really great film, Doubt. And, you know, when you think of all the awards that Meryl Streep has, you'd wonder how could she beat out some of these others, Anne Hathaway for Rachel Getting Married, or Kate Winslet for Revolutionary Road, or even Kate Blanchett for The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, which I think is curious in the sense that the critics like it. But in any case, still, those names I mentioned will probably get the nominations, and Meryl Streep will probably be the favorite.
How about Best Picture?
Doubt is also a film that will get in the Best Picture nomination most likely because it has all of these attributes. It's from a Pulitzer Prize-winning play. It has this, all of the cast are all Oscar winners. I mean, the two leads, Philip Seymour Hoffman and Meryl Streep, are very respected Oscar winners. I think it's likely to get the Best Picture. And then in addition, we're looking at Frost Nixon, the aforementioned Milk, and then the most refreshing movie of this year, perhaps of the decade, the film Slumdog Millionaire.
Why are people talking so greatly about Slumdog Millionaire? How can it be nominated for an Oscar?
Well, the first reason that Slumdog Millionaire should be nominated and will be nominated is because it's an extraordinary piece of cinema on every level. Now, this is not for kids because it has some violence. It's clearly an R-rated film. But the Slumdog Millionaire takes classic storytelling and uses modern digital technology to show a part of the world that most Westerners are unfamiliar with, and a mashup soundtrack which combines Indian traditional music with hip-hop, and the whole effect is a mind-boggling roller coaster ride that tells a fairy tale and in the end makes you feel great. So it has elements of Rocky, much like The Wrestler, elements of classic movies combined with this fresh perspective and a glimpse at the third world. And my pick for the favorite right now to win Best Picture is Slumdog Millionaire.
James Hurston, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, I know it's going to continue to be fascinating, and I want to thank you for allowing me to discuss this with you. It's a part of our pop culture, and it's a nice break from the pure politics. Thanks.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Nancy Mussolini Pelosi has already brought up the Fairness Doctrine to shut down talk radio that is considered unfriendly to the upcoming communist administration. This unfairness doctrine will be used as a tool to silence the last voices of freedom of speech in the media. But did you know that in the past it was used to silence voices on the left as well? You see, leftists, be careful what you wish for. There is a bill in the works called the Broadcaster Freedom Act that could put an end to the unfair Fairness Doctrine once and for all. Congressman Ed Royce is a co-sponsor of the bill and joins us for a report about it.
Thank you. One of our concerns in the House of Representatives is when our Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, was first elected, she said she was going to aggressively pursue legislation to reinstate the Fairness Doctrine. And now we have a situation where a majority could come on the Federal Communications Commission and could reinstate the Fairness Doctrine. Why would Democrats, or at least leftist activists, want the Fairness Doctrine back? Well, one of the members of a prior Democratic administration said, we had a massive strategy to use the Fairness Doctrine to challenge and harass the right-wing broadcasters and hope the challenge would be so costly to them that they would be inhibited and decide it was too expensive to continue. Well, that's basically the strategy, is to shut down freedom of speech. And so we have legislation, the Broadcaster Freedom Act, that Congressman Pence is the lead author on. I'm a co-sponsor. But this bill would bar not only Congress, but also President-elect Barack Obama and the federal media regulators from bringing back the Fairness Doctrine, which, as you know, would all but eliminate the talk radio industry. Because what will happen is, just as that former official, Bill Reuter, that I quoted from a former Democratic administration would do, they would set up a system of systematically harassing and filing lawsuits against broadcasters in order to shut down those who they consider unfriendly. Now, I for our friends out there in the listening audience who are liberals or on the left, they should realize that also Dick Nixon, when he was president, used that same tactic. License harassment of stations considered unfriendly to the administration became a regular item on the agenda at White House policy meetings and was used as a tool. My friend Tom Hazlett, who was former FCC commissioner and agrees very much with freedom of speech and doing basically allowing broadcasters to have talk radio, raises the point that both Richard Nixon used this as a tool and Democratic administrations have used it as well. So if you are for freedom of speech, if you think that the works of Thomas Jefferson are important, if when Jefferson said liberty of speaking, that's what guards our other liberties, when he authored that First Amendment to freedom of speech to the Constitution of the United States, originally in the state of Virginia, when he argued of freedom of speech, freedom of religion. If you're concerned about our right to broadcast that and our ability to have an open forum on it, you will contact your legislator and get them to get in touch with Mike Pence and become a co-sponsor on the Broadcaster Freedom Act. This is about protecting your right of free speech. The way in which the administration will likely pass the fairness doctrine is they'll soon have a 3-2 majority on the FCC capable of bringing back that doctrine through administration through administrative action. So they're not going to need congressional approval. So the way in which to prevent that would be for a majority of the members of Congress, of the House and Senate, to co-sponsor the legislation that Congressman Pence has advanced, the Broadcaster Freedom Act, which would prevent the regulator, prevent the FCC from restricting journalistic freedom. From, frankly, you know, the Federal Communications Commission did the right thing 20 years ago in throwing this unnecessary, counterproductive, unwise restriction on speech into the regulatory dustbin. It should be left there, and to keep it there, we need to pass this legislation. So we need co-sponsors. We need people to contact their member of Congress and tell them to get on the Broadcaster Freedom Act bill. I think that it all depends upon the amount of support that we receive from the American public. Members, especially on the other side of the aisle, are not going to get onto this bill unless they hear from their constituents. Now, they know that freedom of speech is an important issue to Americans, but unless they hear from their constituency, they are not likely to co-sponsor the bill. And if we get a majority of the members of the House to co-sponsor, then, of course, we can bring it up and pass it. Anytime you have a majority of the members co-sponsoring legislation, you can generally get it to the House floor. So we need some direct action by the American public right now on this bill. And I would also say that long-term, if we learn from history, I talked a little bit about the consequences of being silent on this and how in the past, Democratic administrations and Dick Nixon's administration used the Fairness Doctrine in order to challenge and harass broadcasters, and did so with the idea that they would make it so costly for them to continue that they shut down a lot of those broadcasters. They threatened to pull their license if they didn't cancel certain shows that were not to the liking of those in government. So I think it's very, very important for the freedom of the country that we prevail on this. Back to you, Michael.
Thank you, Congressman. We need to do something to ensure our freedom of speech will not be taken away, as has the freedom of economics. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Thank the Lord and thank the pilot. I mean, I can't believe that somehow he managed to land that plane safely. You know, that's all I could say. And I hope that everybody who's got family on the plane, you know, can at least think that, you know, everybody here is pretty much okay. And this was a near-death experience that thankfully did not turn that way.
It's an interesting question about who might be possibly liable. Obviously, there's shared responsibilities. It could be the airline. From what I see, the pilots did everything right. The pilot did absolutely everything right.
You know, the miracle on the Hudson River has been down for only a single day, and already the vultures are circling, the media vultures, the legal vultures. Yesterday, when the captain, Sullenberger, landed flight 1549 in the Hudson River, he kept the plane intact and afloat. He refused to leave the plane before he knew all the passengers were out. He saved the lives of 155 people. It was an act of the purest type of heroism. Everyone who watched the plane come down, everyone who was on board the airplane agrees that he should receive the credit. And yet, the very night of the accident, a psycho on television, Nancy Graceless, who belongs in a nut house, in my opinion, and her verminous guests were already on the TV screen speculating whether the airline would be sued.
Will there be lawsuits, or will this be considered an act of God?
Well, there shouldn't be lawsuits, and it is an act of God. But having said that, there's an accident, there's injuries. Some lawyers are going to sue some people, but they're going to say that the plane should be made to be able to withstand the birds. Plus, you may even get a lawsuit from PETA against the airlines for killing the birds.
They were practically egging on some potentialist ambulance chaser, some little Madoff with a law degree. As the plane was falling from the skies, Captain Sullenberger told the passengers to brace for impact. Little did he know that the impact might be a legal one. Today, America's verminous lawyers are more interested in suing than saving. America's legal system is more interested in self-serving than serving and protecting. These vermin are more interested in class action than in a class act. The scum of America's law schools see what happened yesterday, not as an act of heroism, but as an act of opportunity. Captain Sullenberger seems to be one of the last men of a bygone age, an age in which skill was more important than the color of your skin, an age in which the ability to triumph over adversity was more important than diversity. Well, Sullenberger triumphed over adversity, but the harridan Nancy Graceless and whatever legal hacks she's able to coax out of the mud seem determined to set more adversity before him. And the media sees it as an opportunity also. Anyone who saw the coverage in the wake of the accident yesterday should be disgusted. Neil Cavuto and Wolf Blitzer seemed downright hungry for blood. And though this accident itself may have caused no serious injury, the American way of life will be seriously injured if the legal vermin are allowed to get their hands on this American hero. But there are other topics out there. 1-800-449-8255. I've always been fascinated with history. It's the basis for understanding the present. The problem with history is you can't always trust those who write history, especially those who teach history in very liberal universities. These people teach in a way that reinforces their own views. For instance, I'm sure many of you were taught that FDR saved us from the Great Depression, when in fact many of his policies only made it worse. Many of you were taught that Gandhi was the great peaceful ascetic who gave India its freedom, when in fact the result of Gandhi's activism in India caused huge amounts of suffering and forced migration and the deaths of over 1 million people. As George Orwell once wrote, those who control the past control the future. That's why I'd like to bring on Dr. Ivan Eland, author of Recarving Rushmore, a book in which he rates all the presidents not by how prominently they figure in so-called history books, but by how they actually impacted the country. Dr. Eland, can you tell us about your book?
Thank you, Michael. I'm going to talk about my book, Recarving Rushmore, Ranking the Presidents on Peace, Prosperity, and Liberty. And I think the book would be very interesting to conservatives because I really sort of debunk some of the presidents that we thought were conservative and say that others that we don't think are conservative are more that way. And I think basically we should probably start out with Ronald Reagan because everyone holds him out as the icon of conservatism. But there was a piece a while back, an editorial piece by Victor Davis Hanson, which I think hit right on the target when it said that he wasn't as conservative and he has a more mixed record than people would indicate. My book essentially rates presidents on their policies. It doesn't pay attention to image or charisma or rhetoric that makes it into speeches such as John F. Kennedy's speeches or FDR's. It doesn't overrate presidents for being president during a crisis. It doesn't overrate governmental activism, whether it's liberal or conservative governmental activism. And I just try to rate presidents based on whether they upheld the Constitution as the founders had intended. And that phrase is very important, as the founders had intended, and also whether their policies promoted peace, prosperity, and liberty. And on that basis, I think that you find out some very interesting things about the presidents. And one of the things that you find out is that Ronald Reagan wasn't all that conservative. He has a conservative image, but of course there are many things that he did that weren't so conservative. In the foreign policy area, he pulled out of Lebanon when the terrorists attacked the Marine barracks and killed 241 service people. Bin Laden has said that was the first time he realized that the United States could be defeated by terrorism. Of course, Ronald Reagan also traded arms for hostages, selling heavy weapons to Iran as part of the Iran-Contra affair, which was, of course, probably worse than Watergate because the Reagan administration secretly undermined the major congressional power still left that Congress has after its power has eroded, and that is the power of appropriation. They transferred the funds to the Nicaraguan Contras in contravention of the congressional will. Of course, he even even his tear down the wall speech was, of course, a mask for arms control. He almost got rid of all ballistic missiles. And, of course, he reached the intermediate force agreement with the Soviets. But in the fiscal area, I think Reagan doubled the size of the federal government, increased spending as a proportion of GDP, where, of course, Clinton and Carter actually reduced that. So that's a very interesting fact. And many of his tax cuts were fake because they had to raise taxes later. They had to run big deficits, which, of course, increased the cost of money and dragged the economy. And, of course, they're fake if you don't cut spending. And, of course, he didn't cut spending. Veteran Galloway, two conservative free market economists, actually give Clinton a much better rating for fighting inflation and limiting government than Reagan. Also, I think it's very dubious that he won the Cold War. Usually when empires fall, it's because of internal reasons rather than external factors. There's no doubt he put some pressure on the Soviets, but the missile defense was only a small part of the defense budget, so it was unlikely to have caused that, or even the defense pressure that he put on the Soviets. The Soviet economy, as we all know, is very dysfunctional, the communist socialist, and so this had an effect. So I think actually Carter and Clinton were the two people that, of all the post-war presidents, decreased government as a percentage of GDP. Eisenhower held it constant, and all the other presidents increased it. And so I think we have to look at that when we actually look at the presidents to see whether their policies were conservative or not. And a lot of times party label doesn't really matter much when you look at the policies. Carter, of course, as I mentioned, decreased government spending as a percentage of GDP. He deregulated communications, transportation, energy, and financial services. And he also nominated Paul Volcker, who did the monetarist experiment and really provided the prosperity for not only the Reagan years but the Clinton years. Carter was also for personal responsibility. Clinton did welfare reform, was more free trade than both Reagan and George Bush, and reduced government as a percentage of GDP along with Clinton. And, of course, Clinton was for fiscal restraint even before Newt Gingrich took office. But Newt Gingrich, of course, needs to be given a lot of credit for pushing Clinton in the right direction as well. But Clinton was able to learn from the 1994 election. So I think even though Clinton was – I rate him as an average president and Carter as a better president. But I think we a lot of times have to pay attention to the actual policies. And Clinton was conservative in some things more so than Reagan and George W. Bush. And, of course, George W. Bush has been downgraded for massive federal spending, the greatest increase in spending since LBJ. George Bush likes to compare himself to LBJ, but of course, Reagan. But of course, he's more like LBJ, running a guns and butter program. So I think there are many problems with the Bush presidency. I don't think he's the worst president, but I rated him about 36 out of 40 that I rated. We're now in two quagmires. Katrina was response was horrendous, and of course we now have the meltdown. So these are just some of the things in the book about presidents. I rate most presidents. The only two I don't rate are Garfield and Harrison because of their short time in office. So the book is Recarving Rushmore, Ranking the Presidents on Peace, Prosperity, and Liberty. And after looking at the policies of presidents and ignoring charisma, whether they served in time of crisis or war, or whether they're activists, trying to eliminate those biases and actively looking at whether the policies were good for the country and whether they upheld the Constitution, I get some pretty surprising results in the book. Now back to you, Michael.
Thank you, Ivan. I think more people should make honest assessments about their presidents, past and present. This is the Savage Nation. Savage. Well, here's what I've been talking about on the Savage Nation today. One, American hero versus the vultures, the socialization of the banks, and, of course, the relics of the good old days. The first topic is the American hero versus the vultures, the worst offender being the psycho, Nancy Graceless, the woman with the psycho eyes, in my opinion, and her ghoulish lawyer guest predicting that people will sue the airlines for saving their lives. How many ungrateful passengers do you think will sue the man that saved their lives? Let's say all of them. What do you think of the fat slob from the NTSB who got up in front of the media today and refused to give credit to the pilot, instead implying that there were drug tests necessary? How about a drug test for the slob from the NTSB? How about a drug test for Congress? Why would the NTSB do drug testing on a crew who clearly did a fantastic job of saving the passengers? How about drug testing for the NTSB? You know, I thought about dogs last night. I got to tell you this. I'm not going to go in, my dog is great, but my dog is great. This 10-pound poodle, Teddy. I was mad at him for 2 days. I gave him the cold shoulder. He was hurt by it because he peed all over the house from 24. I think it scared him with the atomic bomb and the screaming and the shooting and the yelling. What I had to clean up for 2 days around the house, little hidden areas there. But I forgave him. Now we're friends again. Now every morning I get up, it's the same thing. He sits on this pink chair. I have a recliner that I bought. I don't know how they let this store into Marin County. All the libs were like mad at it. Lazy Boy. When Lazy Boy opened in Marin County, all the phony snobs, ooh, we can't have that in our county. That's not classy. I went and I bought a beautiful recliner that is so ugly, it's unbelievable. It's like ugly chair. Every house must have an ugly chair. That's the only chair you actually wind up sitting in. Beautiful chairs nobody will sit in. If they do, you have to worry that you're going to stain it, you know, with something. But the ugly chair you could sit in, you can eat in it, you can drink in it, coffee could spill on it, doesn't matter. This chair is so comfortable that Teddy took it over. It's his chair. So every morning it's a pink recliner from Lazy Boy. He jumps on the chair and he puts his back up against it and he gives me his two paws out, I swear to God, and he does it. I taught him how to do high five. Give me five. And we do like it. We play. Like I do the hands back and forth. Give me five. Give me four. Give me three. He loves this game. He could have been a circus dog. My dog could have been anything. I wonder how he is. He had a little growth underneath his private part that was worrying me a little bit. He went to the vet today. I don't even know how it came out. You know, maybe we should get the vet on the show, see how Teddy's private parts are, because I want to breed him this year. I don't want him to disappear. How? You know, once in a few hundred thousand years, a perfect animal comes along. How could his genes be lost? He's like Western civilization himself, my dog. We got to breed this dog. I got to have five or six puppies and keep two of them. I'm not going to sell him. You think I'm going to sell him and have a liberal buy him? Oh, yeah, I want. And they're going to send me pictures of him being mauled in a pit bull arena to torture me? No. I would never sell puppies. No, I couldn't do it, you know, because I don't know how they'll be used. I'll keep a couple of them. So I'm becoming like more and more doggy. I mean, I love the dogs. I just love them so much. Because you can trust them. I thought about it last night, his eyes. Now that he he knows I like him again after the peeing thing where I gave him the cold shoulder. Dogs' eyes are very interesting. If you don't abuse your dog, you only get a couple of emotions out of them, but none of them are hate. Did you realize what I just said to you? Most dogs don't know how to hate. Yeah, you could train a dog to hate. I'm not talking about that. In general, in a normal house, a dog has a set of emotions that you could see in their eyes. Admiration, love, happiness. Maybe it's sometimes a little hurt when you leave them and you're going to go out and be a human without them. They don't understand it because they think that they're you. Why can't you take me to that wedding tonight, Dad? What is wrong with you? I'm as good as you. I know, son, but not everybody sees the world the way you do. Not everybody wants short, furry creatures running around at weddings or in restaurants. You'll have to just stay home. So you get those, but you never get hate. Does dog ever look at you with hatred? No. Which is why we love them. You understand that? Well, you should have a dog. And by the way, don't trust people who don't have dogs. Oh, I just got the news. The tiny lump under his testicles turns out to be benign. There's nothing there. So, I mean, it was pretty worrisome because there's a little tiny lump there. And like any living creature, you know, or the way of all flesh, you worry. You know, maybe the little guy has cancer or something. But it turns out he's probably bitten by some bug and it scabbed over and it disappeared. But he sure enjoyed licking himself down there all the months that he thought of it. He had a justification. Look, who can blame him, you know? I think the reason we're not dogs, or one of the reasons that they are dogs, is they can do that. However you look at it, I mean, Normal men can't do that. That's why we're not dogs. If we were, see, if we were double jointed like that, we probably would be dogs. So God made it so you can't do that. Do you understand what I'm saying? If you have an animal, it's amazing to watch how they behave. Even a little thing like a bite in their private parts, what they do with. I'm just elated. I'm not felinophobic. Don't get me wrong. I'm not exactly a felinophile. But I prefer dogs because dogs to me are covert and cats dogs are overt and cats are covert. Cats remind me of people in Pacific Heights or in the San Francisco government. Everything they do is hidden and secretive. They're trying to sweep it into the cat litter box, but I kind of doubt that that's where it's going to end up. You know, they're like cats in this city, like cats that are really dirty, that gussy themselves up with Da Vinci dresses. But behind it, you know that there's dirty underwear. That's what the whole city reminds me of. The miners came in 49 and 51, the whores. You ever hear that? Mark Twain wrote it. I'm sure many of you love it. I didn't write it. Mark Twain did before the Fairness Doctrine. That's not a dirty word. In 49, the miners came in 51, the whores. And then he says, and then something evolved from it. It's called Pacific Heights. That's how they run San Francisco. But they put on dresses from back east. You know, we have one of the best Opry's west of the Hudson and the Mississippi River. We put on quite a symphony out here. Oh, it's so out of town that I love it. There's no bigger small town than San Francisco. I wouldn't mind if they were patriotic or Americana, but my God, how could they be so anti-American? It's hard to believe. Everything that's family-oriented, they despise. They spit on the flag, the Boy Scouts. But thank God Teddy's okay. That's all. I can't wait to see the little guy after the show. Go home, talk to him. Say, Teddy, I am so glad you went to the doctor and you don't have a tumor under your private parts, but stop licking them already. There's no excuse anymore. You can't say, Dad, it itches, or Dad, there's a problem. You're just being a dirtbag if you keep doing it, Ted. I can't do that because I'll give him a complex. I think you can give dogs a complex. They are very sensitive to criticism. Oh, my God. They're like liberals. Liberals are very good at pretending they don't care what you say to them, but boy, do they care. Whoa, they're thin-skinned.
Savage.